This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's check in. We had an election last night, particularly in Kansas and Ohio. Let's check in with our old friend Greg Palast, the investigative journalist, author, filmmaker. His most recent book and movie, which you can find over at on Amazon and in other places, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. GregPalast.com is the website. You can tweet him at Greg_Palast, just like Tom_Hartman. Greg, welcome back.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
Always great having you. Greg, I noticed in the news reports last night that they were saying that Mr. O'Connor, the Democrat, lost by, well, it hasn't been called yet, but for this reason, that he was behind the Republican by about 1,000 votes, but that there were 8,000 provisional ballots in this one congressional district. And I was yelling at the TV, tell us what that means. And, of course, nobody said a word. Please, Greg, tell us what that means.
Okay, it's a combination of 3,435 provisional ballots, or as I call them, placebo ballots. You fill them out, you think you voted, well, hey, maybe not. They are given to people whose names suddenly went poof and disappeared magically from the voter rolls. Except in Ohio, it's not magic. 500,000 people were removed by the vicious Republican Secretary of State, John Husted, in Ohio in the last 2 years, 500,000 people. If those people who lived in the district found their names missing, they'd get this provisional ballot. And here's the bad news. If you're wrongly removed from the voter rolls, they still won't count your provisional ballot. So you don't get that counted. Now, whose ballots are they? We know that they are overwhelmingly from Franklin County, from the urban area, which is overwhelmingly Democratic. So the victory, the congressional race, is being determined by the votes not counted, not by the votes cast. In addition, by the way, to the 3,435 provisional ballots, we have a couple thousand uncounted absentee ballots, same game. And you have, because if you send an absentee ballot and your name's missing from the voter rolls, they just check it. And there's a lot of votes called spoiled, which is, in Ohio, lots of votes simply get cast and never counted. And again, overwhelmingly in the urban, that is, Democratic areas around Columbus and Franklin County.
So in this election that may end up being called by fewer than 1,000 votes or in the neighborhood of 1,000 votes, you're suggesting that close to 10,000 people, their votes won't get counted. They're from an overwhelmingly Democratic district because of specific intervention in the Ohio voting rolls by the Ohio Secretary of State. Is that the bottom line here?
That's the bottom line, and there's not much suggestion. The Supreme Court heard the case, and the Supremes voted 5-4 to allow Ohio to remove these people from the voter rolls.
Right.
And so there's not much speculation. We know that those are Democratic votes in the throwaway pile, in the electoral dumpster, in the provisionals, the uncounted absentees, and the spoiled votes. It's not close. The Democrats won if you would count all the votes. And that's just a cold fact from the analysis that was just discussed at the Supreme Court. It was acknowledged. They didn't even disagree with the facts that the uncount vote, that the voters purged, that the uncounted votes are overwhelmingly in Franklin County in black and urban districts.
Remarkable. But what's going on with Kansas?
Ah, what's the matter, Kansas? Well, it's too close to call officially between Chris Kobach, our fave, Mr. Crosscheck himself, Trump's vote thief in chief, Chris Kobach, and the sitting Republican Governor Collier. It's close because Donald tweeted in favor of Kobach the day before the election. However, the uncounted ballots, which are in excess of 100,000, are all...
Whoa, 100,000?
Yeah, 100,000.
That's how many people bounced off the voting rolls? And these apparently are Republicans. I mean, this is the Republican primary, right?
They're stuck in the voting machines. You know how efficient voting machines are. So right. The technicians from ES&S, the voting machine company, are trying to tease out those ballots out of the machines in the Kansas City suburbs. Now, if they count those votes, if they don't, if the machines just don't go poof. And remember who's in charge of the machines, the Secretary of State, one Kris Kobach. But if they do count those votes, I don't see how Kobach survives. Not in this race. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to lose the man. Remember, the vampire ain't dead till there's a golden stake through his heart. But I don't think he can win this race in the Republican primary if they can find the votes inside those machines that are locked in and they can't come out.
So, 100,000 votes not being counted in Kansas because the ESNS. What happened to the machines? I mean, do we have any idea why?
Well, the line that they're putting out is that the machines that the votes are there, but they can't pull the tallies out, and that ESNS, the voting machine company, has its technicians working all night. The question is, who are they working for? But they're working all night to get the votes out. If those votes come out, I think it's going to be hard for Kobach to claim a victory in this gubernatorial primary.
Interesting.
But I want to emphasize, that doesn't mean the end of Kris Kobach. He's still Secretary of State, and he's still Trump's vote fraud hunter.
Yeah. Back to Ohio, just real quickly, Greg. Mm-hmm. I was surprised that there were as few provisional ballots as there were. I got the sense after the Supreme Court case and how aggressive Ohio has been in recent years of purging the voting rolls, that there would probably be a much larger number. What am I missing here?
What's missing here is the reason it tends to be small is that there's only a small part of the congressional district in Franklin County. In other words, you ain't getting provisional ballots in those white suburban areas in Delaware County and the other collar counties around Columbus, Ohio, which is the capital. So it's a very small part of Franklin, and that's really where the provisional ballots are. They're back-of-the-bus ballots, overwhelmingly given to black folk and poor folk, and they're the ones who get shafted out of their vote and handed these provisional ballots. So it's basically you have a huge suburban white and Republican district, and that's actually what makes it quite astounding that it is close enough for them to steal.
Yeah, and the Republicans tend not to get their votes purged, so this was basically out of this one.
One out of the five counties, yeah.
Yeah, remarkable. Greg, just a quick last question here. What is being done to clean this? I had a caller in the last hour saying, why can't Democrats get on board with Republicans about, cleaning up the voting rolls and just giving everybody a free national ID or something like that? And I'm like, we have laws against illegally voting. You can go to jail for anywhere from a year to 5 years, depending on the state. Similarly, we have laws against shoplifting. You can go to jail for a year to 5 years, depending on the state, for shoplifting. By and large, people don't shoplift, A, because they're not inclined, and B, because they don't want to go to jail. For the same reason, people don't vote when they're not legal to vote. I mean, it might be 50 people a year across the country, and most of them are voting by mistake, felons who didn't realize they couldn't vote, things like that. But Democrats are starting to buy this. What can we do?
Oh, boy. Well, think about this. You have 3,400 people, mainly in Columbus, Ohio, who showed up at the polls to vote in this congressional race. If they were illegal voters, you shouldn't throw away their ballots. You should arrest them. But they're not illegal voters. If they're illegal voters, arrest them. Now, in the old days, if your name was missing from the voter rolls and you swore under penalty of prison on an affidavit that you are a legal voter, your vote would count. That's the old affidavit system, which was replaced by George Bush with provisional ballots, which don't get counted on your affidavit statement.
Hmm. So what we need to do is go back to, at the very least, because I'm guessing probably some of these folks who are getting provisional ballots too are people who simply showed up without ID.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing, is that you have ID requirements in Ohio, which is horrendous. By the way, a lot of people who don't have the ID or their names are missing from the voter rolls walk away. They don't bother filling out the provisional ballot.
Right.
So we haven't talked about the big walk away, the spoiled ballots, that is the ballots that they say are uncountable. Again, mostly in Franklin, we're trying to get that information. They tend to hide that stuff. In England, by the way, the BBC never reports the tally without telling you how many votes were not counted. Hmm. It kind of minimizes the uncount. Right. So, I think one of the things is we have to go back to the idea that
Oh, I'm sorry, Greg. We're using your Skype audio, and it can't compete with the music, and the music just started. Greg Palast, the genius of Greg Palast, investigative journalist, author, and filmmaker. GregPalast.com. You can tweet him at Greg_Palast. Greg, thanks so much for being with us. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's 16 and a half minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. And welcome back. Wow. Michael in Snohomish County, Washington. Hey, Michael, thanks for listening to KBCS. What's up?
Hey, good morning. Yeah, you're talking about the votes in Ohio brought this to mind, a quote from Joseph Stalin. Those who cast the votes decide nothing. Those who count the votes decide everything.
Yes, well said. Very well said. Michael, thanks for the call and thanks for sharing that. Spot on. Let's see here. No, that wouldn't work. Jenkins in North Carolina. Hey, Jenkins, you're on the air. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Thank you, sir. There was a news flash that came over MSNBC. Chris Collins, the Republican from New York, who's in the Senate, I think.
No, he's in the House of Representatives. He was the very first member of the House of Representatives back during the Republican primaries in 2016 to endorse Donald Trump. And he campaigned with Trump. He spoke at the Republican convention. And apparently the insider trading that he did while he was at the White House. He called his son and he called somebody else and said, hey, here's an inside tip. Bizarre stuff, isn't it?
He got a problem now because they've indicted him. He turned himself in, and who was that? Paul Ryan came out and said that he can no longer serve in his capacity until this case is resolved.
Well, now, he's actually yes and no. He's gonna continue to serve in the House of Representatives. He will continue to have a vote. He will continue to be able to introduce legislation and speak on the floor. What Paul Ryan pulled from him was his single committee position. He's on one of the committees, and I'm sorry, I don't remember which one it was, but that has been pulled, so he's no longer on that committee, but that's it.
Okay, now I want to ask you a question concerning the voting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the people that are being purged illegitimately, why don't all of these people get together, get an attorney, sue the state, and say, if we can't vote, we don't pay taxes, and they'll automatically stop all that crap.
I love the idea. The problem is that, number one, the people don't have any way of knowing who each other are. It's not like they're members of a union, you know, where they're all connected to each other. So how do you find all the other people who got screwed just like you did, number one? And number two, it's very, very hard to sue a state. You have this thing called sovereign immunity that states and officials acting on behalf of the states, the election officials, are assumed to be operating in the best interest of the people, and particularly people in their official capacity generally can't be sued unless you can demonstrate criminal intent. And I think some of these things are a crime if what Greg is saying is right, but it hasn't been nailed down. It hasn't been demonstrated, and in some states, you know, I'm not even sure if what these guys are doing are crimes. So,
right.
Yeah. So Jenkins,
hopefully they can come up with something. Okay,
yeah,
thank you, sir.
Yeah, I'm with you. Jenkins, thanks a lot for the call. Spot on. I mean, you know, it would be nice if there was some way to hold the officials of Ohio liable, you know, responsible for what they're doing. But the Supreme Court said that it's fine. In a 5-4 decision, the five Republican appointees saying, fine with us. The four Democratic appointees going, what? Are you kidding? But that's the state of our politics today. That's the state of our Supreme Court today. And that's what happens when you allow a Republican to steal an election in 2000 like George W. Bush, a Republican to steal an election in 1980, Ronald Reagan, a Republican to steal an election in 2016, Donald Trump. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's see here. Alex in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Alex, thanks for listening to 91.3 FM. What's up?
Oh, hey. I just wanted to maybe explain about actually getting purged. from the rolls because it happened to me about 3 years ago.
Wow, what happened?
Well, I take care of my 97-year-old grandfather. I used to take care of developing disabled adults. Mm-hmm. When my grandfather had a fall, my family asked me if I would come look after him. So I don't make very much because the state can't pay me because Grandpa makes too much in whatever his stuff is, his retirement stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm on food stamps. And that's really important to just keeping me and him fed. And I got this letter in the mail, and it was this strange letter, and I can't remember exactly what it says, but it boiled down to this. It was about I had to re-register or I had to register my party. And it was this circular logic that didn't make any sense. And it said if I didn't fill it out and send it back, I would lose my food stamps. And I read it over and over again and got madder and madder because it made zero sense about registering, because I'd been registered as a Democrat pretty much ever since they made us do it by the state. They said we had to register when they changed over to a primary system. Mm-hmm. And in order to keep my food stamps, I had to send this letter back in. Well, I sent it back in, and I stopped getting my absentee ballots. And when I went and talked to GSHS about it, when I went to renew my food stamps at some point, the guy says, I would have to see the letter. Well, I didn't have the letter because I needed my food stamps. I had to send it back in.
I wonder if the letter was sent to you by a Republican front group, and it was a phony letter, and what you were signing was something saying, "I don't want to vote anymore."
Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy. I read it over and over again. I wish I should have kept it, but I couldn't lose my food stamps.
Yeah, I wish you'd made a copy of it.
It made no sense.
That's
and it took me 3 years just with how hard things are with my papa taking care of him before I got around to be able to re-register.
Incredible, incredible. Alex, I suspect that there's a lot of this kind of nasty stuff going on. Wow. Thank you for calling and sharing your story with us. It's great to hear from you. Van in Lewis Center, Ohio. Hey, Van, what's on your mind today?
Yes. Hi, Tom. I voted last night. I me and my kids was laughing about how I always took them to the voting poll, and when they turned 18, I took them up there first thing, mm-hmm. had them vote, and my son, and each time I took a picture, can't do that now. Mm-hmm. But we had a situation the last two elections with my son. My son lives with me, and I never had a problem, going up there, and they had my name on the list. Mm-hmm. But every time he turned around, his name wasn't on there. So I had the voter number where if you had problems, you can call the number, mm-hmm. and they would work it out. So, they were getting ready to give my son a provisional ballot, and I said, oh, no provisional ballot. His name should be on there. Mm-hmm. So then we was back and forth, and then finally we went out to the car, and I called the voter number. The guy came out, and my son called Board of Elections, I think it was. Mm-hmm. I gave him a number. And then he went back inside and gave the phone to the poll worker. I was still in the car, and they looked up my son's name, and they found it. So when I went back inside, I was getting ready to raise all kinds of hell. But they had already straightened it out at that time. Mm-hmm. And they let him vote regular. But even before that, when we first came in there, there was a black man, and he was standing up there, and he was all confused about how come he, couldn't vote and stuff, and they sent him to another voting place. Hmm. And I said, well, this is just a game they're playing, and I had to explain to my son, you never walk away. Your name is supposed to be on that voting list, and you stay there till they let you vote regular. Mm-hmm. No provisional ballots because they never work out. They never count them. So, that was my story. So, we're in Lewis Center, and we voted last night, and I don't know what's going to happen to O'Connor, but we'll vote for him in November.
Yeah. So your son got purged? Is that what happened? I mean, did they assert that he was no longer an eligible voter? Do you know what happened
purged.
Or when or why?
Well, no, I didn't find out. He was and he got purged. He was like in his mid-20s at the time.
Mm-hmm. And he had been voting.
Yeah, he had been voting. Wow. He had been voting. And as a matter of fact, before we voted yesterday, you know, I called the Board of Elections Friday and made sure my name and his name was on there. And they said, yes, it's on there. And, you know, I verified the poll in place. So we went there yesterday and we didn't have any problems. So people have to be vigilant. Don't just accept taking a provisional ballot. Don't accept the fact that your name's not on there. Call ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Find out where your polling place is. Make sure your name is on there. And then go vote. And like you said, bring somebody with you.
There you go. Okay, well said, Van. Thank you very much for the call. I wonder how many, all our lines are filled right now. I wonder how many other people are having the same problem. Here we've got two in a row of people who've been purged from the voting rolls. One through apparently a Republican dirty trick, and the other, we don't know. But in Ohio, gee, what a surprise. We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Actually, we'll be back with Tom Perez, the head of the DNC, doing a debrief on what happened with the elections. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The website worstforwomen.com has just released their list of the worst candidates for women in the United States. It includes Representative Don Bacon, Representative Dave Bratt, Representative Ted Budd, Senator Ted Cruz, Representative Ron DeSantis, Representative Glenn Grothman, he's a man, Representative Karen Handel, a woman, Senator Dean Heller, Representative Jim Jordan, Representative Steve King, Jason Lewis, and Representative Kevin McCarthy. The worst for women over at worstforwomen.com. On the line with us is the head of the DNC, Tom Perez, former Secretary of Labor, and the chairman of the DNC. Democrats.org is the website. You can tweet him at Tom Perez. Secretary Perez, welcome back to the program.
Always great to be with you and your listeners. Calling you from the heart of Pennsylvania, where we're out stumping for Tom Wolf and John Fetterman and a bunch of Democrats up and down the ticket today.
That is great. What's your take-home message from last night's elections?
It's amazing that a seat that a Republican won by over 30 points 4 years ago was a jump ball. This should have been a layup, and it was a jump ball. And it shows that Democrats can win everywhere. And we're going to have a rematch in 90 days when we have a much broader turnout, when we've got people like Sherrod Brown on the ticket, and when we are going to clearly have health care on the ticket in Ohio, because the differences between the Republicans, whether it's DeWine for governor or whether it's this Balderson guy in this seat, and our Democrats, whether it's Danny O'Connor or Rich Cordray, who's running for governor, couldn't be more stark. We think that we need to protect our health care. We think that if you have a pre-existing condition, you ought to be able to still get access to health insurance. And so I was heartened by this. And as you know, there's almost 70 seats in play that are more competitive than the seat we saw last night in Ohio 12. And one of the things that I think is an undertold part of the Ohio 12 story, which I've seen in Ohio 12 and elsewhere, is the fact that there was such a unity of purpose among the Democratic side. There were seven people who ran on the Democratic primary. The Indivisible chapter there, which is really, really incredible. They supported one candidate. When Danny O'Connor won, they immediately pivoted to Danny. The Indivisibles were there, swing left. The DNC, the DCCC, the Ohio Party is spectacular. And I see this unity everywhere across this country, and that's what gives me optimism. If I'm the Republican Party and I still have a jump ball race in a district that's beat red, gerrymandered, I'm in trouble.
Yeah. The Democratic Party rolled out this better deal. I like real deal, but it's there. And I'm curious, the top three lines, you know, the most Democrats who are running around the country, and particularly, you know, we've got this election in November and then the presidential election in two years and 3 months. What in your opinion, as the chair of the Democratic Party, what should be or what will be the top three messages, you know, just sort of like the Republicans run on guns, gays, and gods, or they had, you know, in the past. But what are the Democratic's message? What is the Democratic message?
We're fighting for your future. We're fighting for our democracy. We're fighting for an economy that works for everyone. That's what we've been fighting for. When you have access to good health care, when you don't have to worry about going to the doctor.
Secretary Perez, your phone is fading out. I'm not sure if there's anything you can do about that.
Yes.
Okay.
Do you got me now, Tom?
I do, yeah.
Okay, great. Great. Sorry about that. We're just in rural Pennsylvania here.
Okay.
You know, and what I said was, you know, we're fighting for your future. We're fighting for your jobs. We're fighting for your health care. And frankly, we're fighting for our democracy. Mm-hmm. Because this is the election of a lifetime. It's not only about access to health care. It's not only about good jobs that pay a decent wage. This is about our democracy as we know it. And that's what we continue to fight for. And the reason I think we're winning races is because we've been focusing on the issues that people care about. In Ohio, the 12th Congressional District, it was health care. It was preserving Medicare and Social Security. Throughout the country, we see that people are worried because, you know what, they may have gotten a dollar more in their paycheck, but the cost of gasoline went up 80 cents, their cost of prescription drugs went up $3, and their cost of health insurance went up $5. So they're falling behind. And Democrats are fighting for prosperity for everyone, not just a few at the top.
How clear was that contrast in Ohio? I read that, you know, I'm not in the district, so I haven't seen the ads, but I read that Danny O'Connor? No.
Yes,
yeah.
O'Connor.
Was outspent something like by 300 or 400%, mostly by outside groups from outside the state, and that their sales pitch was, he wants to join Nancy Pelosi in making the borders go away or something, which is just a complete non. I mean, the only people who are in favor of not having, you know, clear borders are libertarians, actually. You know, Rand Paul and his friends. You know, that was their sales pitch. How effective were the Democrats in pushing back on this? I mean, obviously, we came from a 30-point swing toward a Republican 4 years ago to dead heat right now. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, what I was so impressed by was the ground presence. I'm a big believer in ground games and getting out there, talking to people, building relationships. And that's exactly what happened with that partnership of the union movement and Indivisibles, the DCCC, the DNC, Swing Left, the candidates campaign. That's what we were doing. And again, when you have to spend $5 million, as the other side did, on a race that should be in the bag from day one because you've gerrymandered the bejesus out of the district, this is remarkable. Yeah. And what yesterday also reminds us of, again, is if we need another reminder, is the importance of voting, because here we are, roughly 20 hours or 18 hours after the polls have closed in that district, and we still don't have a confirmed winner because it was so close.
Yeah.
And so people can really make a difference getting out there and voting, and that's why I'm here in Pennsylvania today, because, you know, we have an opportunity here to not only reelect Tom Wolf and reelect Bob Casey, but Pennsylvania is ground zero for taking over the U.S. House. And we've invested heavily in Pennsylvania, just as we did in Ohio. We're investing not only in these House races, but then some of these state House races. Because remember, this is a 12-year election. These governors who are going to win this year are going to control redistricting. That's why we fought so hard for Ralph Northam and Phil Murphy last year. And that's why I'm so heartened. We've invested in Wisconsin and Michigan and Ohio. These are three states where I think we can elect Democrats and put them in the governor's seat and put them in the driver's seat on redistricting. That's what it's about. And not only in the Rust Belt here, but across the country, Tom, what heartens me as much as anything is that we're competing everywhere. Stacey Abrams has a spectacular opportunity to make history in Georgia as the first African-American woman elected governor. We have opportunities in Arizona. We have opportunities in South Dakota. where a guy named Billy Sutton is running a spirited campaign. Best candidate for governor probably since the mid-70s in South Dakota, and we're investing there because we believe that when we invest in all 50 states, we can win.
Mm-hmm. Chairman Perez, and Secretary Perez, thank you. the number of people who had to cast provisional ballots is between 300 and 800% larger than the margin, that's still in dispute right now between the Democrat and Republican in Ohio's 12th district, Danny O'Connor's race. And the Supreme Court just gave Ohio carte blanche to purge the voting rolls. And we just had Greg Palast on. He said the vast majority of those appear to have come out of this one county. I believe it's Franklin County, that's majority Democratic county. Is the Democratic Party doing anything to slow down the rate at which the states that are under Republican control are purging people from the voting rolls? Mm-hmm. We saw this hugely in the 2000 election down in Florida. Jeb Bush and Catherine Harris hadn't purged 80,000 African-Americans off the voting rolls just before that election. It's doubtful that George Bush would have gotten his 500-vote victory.
Well, as someone who had the privilege of heading up the Civil Rights Division, this is a question near and dear to my heart. I sued Florida for an unlawful voter purge. The Secretary of State here in Ohio, Husted, wrote the book on voter suppression. Unfortunately, the book was sanctioned by the U.S. Supreme Court. Section 8 of the Motor Voter Law is the provision that governs the maintenance of lists. And it has very, very specific provisions about unlawful voter purges in the run-up to the election. And one of the infrastructure items that we're building and have built at the DNC is that voter protection infrastructure. And you can bet your bottom dollar here in Ohio and in other states across the country, this is exactly what we are on the lookout for, reminding people in elections bureaus that you now, the Section 8 of the Motor Voter Law has very specific provisions that prevent purges in the run-up to the election. We will be watchdogs. We will hold people accountable.
Good on you.
Every vote must count.
Amen. Chairman of the Democratic National Party, or National Committee with the Democratic Party, Tom Perez, former U.S. Secretary of Labor. Secretary, thank you so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure. Have a great day.
Great talking with you. We'll be back with... stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back in 4 minutes. We're going to check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. Stick around. And welcome back. Jack, watching Free Speech TV in Petaluma, California. Hey, Jack, what's on your mind today?
Yes, Tom. I hate to be in the corner of the room, everybody talking on voting, but right now, I'm really worried that we're not seeing the fire in the forest, if you know what I mean.
You're talking about California being on fire?
Well, more than California. You have Washington, you have Idaho,
Oregon's on fire,
Colorado,
right now too.
Yeah. And all these are sources of our great waterways that come west.
Yeah.
I'm really worried with Zinke and our current EPA director that our streams are going to get killed. I think if not for the salmon runs and the bears taking the salmon run or dead salmon up and fertilizing the hillsides, we aren't going to have bears in those woods anymore.
Yeah, well, we may not have woods anymore, for that matter, Jack.
There aren't any woods anymore.
Yeah.
I love your picture of Mount Hood, but can you imagine all those forests being wiped out?
Yeah, amen. Jack, it's an important issue, and we do need legislation to protect from wildfires, and we need to be looking at ways that we can do that spot on. Jack, thanks so much for watching Free Speech TV and for calling in. It's a great point. And well made. Jerry in Capistrano Beach, California. Hey, Jerry, what's on your mind today?
Tom, it's an honor, and I learn something new from you every day.
Thank you.
I'm irritated, really irritated, that our military part of our military has a cyber command, the U.S. Cyber Command.
Yep.
It involves all four branches of the military, and it's based in Maryland, somewhere on a base.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't hear anything about it being used or activated or anything. That should be our first line of defense against the cyber invasion from Russia.
I would think, and not only that, it should be our first line of defense against our voting machines getting hacked, whether it's Russia doing it or whether, you know, it's the proverbial 400-pound guy in his, Donald Trump's statement from the primary, or whether it's, some sort of institutional hack, the Republican Party or something. It's like, we should be paying attention to this. Have you heard, Jerry, anything about the Cyber Command involving itself in these kind of things? My understanding is that they're looking at defense secrets, military stuff. I don't know if they're involved in our critical infrastructure, though, and I would think voting is part of that.
I haven't heard anything about them being activated in any way. I just stumbled upon the information and looked it up on Wikipedia and discovered, well, we have a cyber command. We don't need a space command.
Yeah, I think their job, though, is to fight a cyber war. In other words, if North Korea were to, or China, you know, if we got into a real fight with them, if they were to just, you know, shut down the electric grid for the city of Chicago, something like that, then the Cyber Command's job would be to shut down Beijing or Pyongyang's, electric grid or prevent them from doing it here, that kind of thing.
Well, they could be shutting down some hackers in Russia, for that matter.
Yeah, you would think. Thanks a lot for the call, Jerry. Great to hear from you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for listening on Progressive Voices as well. We're going to check in with Ellen Ratner with Talk Media News in just a moment, so stick around. We'll be right back. It's coming up on 10 minutes before the hour. It's the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Program. Let's check in with Ellen Ratner with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and Ellen's new book, Loving What You Do. Hey, Ellen, what's up in the world?
Well, there's a lot going on, of course, with this president. It's never a dull moment, but of course, it's also the primaries, so that's very interesting. Chris Collins, who is a Republican congressman from 2013, from the 27th District of New York City, New York State, and that is actually, it's the Niagara area, and it goes all the way to almost where I often am, which is Lilydale, New York, Hamburg, New York, it goes to, and he has now been indicted. He has been indicted for insider trading. Now, it's very interesting that he used to be in the same law firm as Giuliani, Greenberg Taurang, yes. And he was charged with basically insider training on a group called Innate Immune Therapeutics. They said that they had a way of dealing with multiple sclerosis. Now, Louise Slaughter, before she died, and she was a biochemist, she started the Stock Act, which meant that people could not use information that they got as members of Congress to somehow enrich themselves. And he told his son, who then told his father-in-law. I mean, this just went on and on. And he did turn himself into the police, to the court today, and we don't know what's going to happen with that.
Yeah, I'm seeing a real interesting piece over at Raw Story that quotes Louise Slaughter on that. But also points out Chris Collins is worth $66 million, and apparently some of that money he got doing this kind of thing, that Tom Price was offered Innate stock by Collins, that Representative John Culbertson of Texas, Republican from Texas, said he heard about Innate from media reports, but the Houston Chronicle noted that it's not clear that there were any media reports. He might have gotten the information from Collins. Representative Mike Conaway of Texas, another lawmaker who bought large shares in Innate. Representative Doug Lamborn, Republican from Colorado.
What he would do is he would tell these people to buy into their company.
Yeah.
Buy into their company.
Yeah. Representative Mark Wayne Mullen of Oklahoma and Representative Billy Long of Missouri. All six of these people, Republicans, who are tight with Chris Collins, and they're all like big buyers of this particular stock. It's pretty bizarre stuff. What else is going on in the world, Ella?
Okay, So Ohio's 12th district, as you know, I am from the great state of Ohio, and this used to be Kasich's district. So what happened is the president came out and supported Balderson, and John Kasich, who of course is running for president and is the governor, was not very happy that the president came. There is now, at this point, the Democrat's name is O'Connor. There's 1,750 votes approximately, give or take one or two, separating the two of them. And so what's very interesting is that there are 3,300 provisional ballots. And so although Donald Trump called the election and Balderson called the election, the press has not called, the fake news press, has not called the election. And it's very interesting. And they said it may be weeks before those provisional ballots are counted.
Right, because they have to contact each one of those people and say, prove that you're actually an eligible voter, because it looks like the Secretary of State took your name off the rolls. We were just talking to Tom Perez about that, and Greg Palast, for that matter. This is pretty grim stuff, you know, these purges. Yeah.
Okay, what else? Kansas is the other interesting election that's going on. Now, this is between two Republicans, Kris Kobach, who the president has supported, and Jeff Collier, who is much more of a moderate Republican. They have to deal with still mail-in ballots and provisional ballots. As you know, they've counted 300,011 votes. There's only 200 votes separating the two of them, if you can believe it.
Yeah, and I understand there's 100,000 votes, quote, stuck in the voting machines, which is pretty strange. Ellen, a quick question. You understand politics. You've been around Washington, D.C. forever. You know a lot of these politicians. And you know a lot of past presidents and their families, for that matter. Donald Trump tweeted out this morning that the early vote in the O'Connor race in Ohio's 12th, that the early vote was coming in 2-1 in favor of the Democrat O'Connor, but that the in-person vote was more like 50-50. And Trump is saying this is because the early vote came in before I went to Ohio and campaigned for Culbertson. And
give me a break.
And now Culbertson's getting all these votes. Well, I'm curious, how do you rebut that? What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure that that's true, because we'd have to really find out whether it was true or not.
Yeah.
And secondly, Donald Trump does whip up his crowd and does get them to go out and vote. That is true. However, the question is whether he whipped up enough votes to make this a really competitive race, and we just don't know about that at this point.
Okay. So what else is up in the world in the news?
Okay. Well, there's a lot more going on. Alex Jones from InfoWars has, as you know, been banned by a lot of social media, but he's not been banned from Twitter. And the reason that he has not been banned from Twitter is because Twitter is claiming that he hasn't broken any of Twitter's rules. Now, I don't know about claiming that what happened in Connecticut with the murder of all those children is you know, I mean, it's clearly false information, but
well,
Alex
Jones he's walked that back,
hasn't he? By the families.
Hasn't he walked that back now? He's no longer pitching that sales pitch?
Well, he's no longer pushing it, but he didn't deny it either, really.
Okay. Interesting.
That I know of. Maybe they read something that I haven't.
So Twitter's being a little more libertarian than the rest of the media.
Right, for sure. Okay, so now also, the Manafort trial is still going on today, and Rick Gates is now testifying for his second day. The most jaw-dropping testimony that he gave is that he said it's possible that he took money from the inaugural. Well, it's not possible. You either did or you didn't.
Who's he?
You probably know it.
Is the he Rick Gates or the he Paul Manafort?
He is Rick Gates. So it's the Manafort trial.
Rick Gates is saying that he might have stolen money from the inaugural committee, but he can't prove it?
Well, he doesn't remember.
Oh, my.
Now, he's not an old bat like me, you know, so his memories, I'm sure.
You and me both. Ellen Ratner with Talk Media News. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
It's great talking with you. Wow, amazing stuff. We'll be back. I've got a pile of news to share with you when we come back from the break. Stick around. It's going to be a fascinating hour. Plus, we'll be taking your calls.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.